Today on Snail Trail 4x4, Dino is a tool.
Snail Trail 4x4 is brought to you by Bestline Racing. Our new Diamond Nano technology acts as tiny ball bearings that keep the boundary layer strong, smooths out the metal surfaces, and is virtually impervious to heat and pressure. This keeps you in your rig rather than under it. High performance is more than our products, it's our lifestyle. Bestline Racing.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast. If you like going off-roading in Toyotas, wrenching on Toyotas, camping in Toyotas, and maybe even poking a little bit of fun at Toyotas, and of course, hearing about how awesome cheater bars are, then this is the podcast for you. That's right, ladies and germs, welcome to episode 102. Man, that's going to take a while to get used to, I think. Yeah, Jimmy?
I agree.
So sitting here next to me on the best, fastest growing Toyota off-road podcast on the internet is the one and only Mr. Jimmy Jett. Say hi to everybody, Jimmy.
Hi, everybody.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Way to fall in line there.
I just do what I'm told, you know.
Yeah, that's good. I like co-hosts that do that. Just kidding. And then we also have Dino over in the corner. Dino, are you going to say hi today? Nope. Still passing on saying hi. Alrighty. And then also joining us in the studio, we have the one and only Mr. Gear Wrench Corey, who we've been talking about. He's finally going to join us here on a podcast. Corey, how are you today?
Hola.
Hola. No, you can't take over my...
I'm just letting all the fans know how it's done properly.
Oh, okay. See, if it was me, I would have been like, hola. Hola,
hola,
everyone.
What?
Hola, what?
You know what's funny? Like, Dino would not stop talking for like the last hour I've been here. And
right?
Now the microphones come on and it's just zips quiet.
Right? It's weird. We keep trying. He drives up in the pink Corolla. Every time, every day when we get to record, he comes inside and he's talk, and we always end up about half an hour, 45 minutes behind schedule, and then as soon as we get on, completely nothing, just shuts up.
So well, I think he's just more in work mode, making sure the board works. But
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I don't know, I just think he's just super shy for some reason on a microphone. I don't know, I don't get it.
He didn't interview that way.
He never shut up during the interview either. We kept trying to ask questions. He would interrupt us, but which is kind of aggravating. But again, he was the only person that interviewed. Sure. So, yeah, you're lucky, Dino. This is episode 102. We have a fun tool master in the house.
Oh, don't call me that. Yeah. I'm sure I'm going to get some people riled up over this one. So,
oh, it's going to be great.
That's the point, right?
Yeah. Those are the fun ones when we get to have the listeners write in and yell at us about certain things, except now it's going to be even better because we can just take the email and forward it over to you and we don't have to respond.
Tables have turned quite a bit on me. You know, episode 99, I only had one complaint, which is progress for you guys.
Yes. We're learning.
And the best part was it wasn't a Tyler goof.
Oh, really?
That was mine?
It was a Jimmy goof.
You called
something channel locks, which is the one you covered before on the other tool one, which is a pot, which is a brand.
A channel lock is a brand?
It's a brand.
Uh-huh. I didn't know that.
Tongue and groove pliers.
Tongue and groove pliers.
Okay.
And now you know, all the audience knows exactly what happens after I listen to a podcast is an immediate text message to YouTube.
Yes. We get a floodgate of text
messages.
Like,
I'm 5 minutes in and I've already got a text for you guys.
Yeah, it's always good seeing your text come through. And just like Jimmy said, well, it'll be like, yeah, I'm about a quarter of the way through the episode. Here's my my notes so far.
Yeah, I like it sometimes when we're like a listener's halfway through, they message us. And then we answer his own question by the end of the episode.
Oh, yeah.
And they respond back to the text message. Yeah. Going like, oh, never mind. You guys just answered that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Corey.
Yes.
Let's get into a little bit before we get into asking you the really deep and important questions. Everybody out there needs to know a few things first. Do you do any off-roading?
Oh, put me on the spot. No, yes. I'm so a little history. My wife actually grew up doing the off-roading.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Nice. Okay. Reversal roles, right? Usually it's the other way around. And so she's been bugging me for like years. Like, I want to get something. I want to get a truck. I want to do something. She grew up going out to the dunes out in her favorite spot in Pismo. So we actually
went. The Oceana Dunes, okay.
Yeah. We went there for our anniversary just to go on the beach. And so now she's all excited that I'm working with you guys now, because that means she's getting permission and we're going to be actively looking for a Toyota to do.
Nice. Ooh, nice. Yeah.
Although my mother broke my heart. She's wanting a Jeep, and I'm like, why?
No.
You know, but she doesn't want it for the reasons that she wants the hard top Jeep, and she wants like, I'm like, what do you want the Jeep for?
Well, yeah.
She doesn't want a grandma car. So
yeah.
I'm like, wait.
Get the new Broncos coming out.
No,
right. Those are going to be sweet. I've been doing a lot of research on Broncos recently, which is dangerous, very dangerous. we'll get into that in a future episode here, because I found some interesting articles on the new 2020 Tacomas, the Broncos, the new 2020 Broncos, and comparisons of the Tacomas versus some of the new JTs.
Right.
So,
did you? This is going back a ways now, but did you see?
Talking about Nicholson.
No.
Okay.
When I was in the airport in Houston, flying out to Buenos Aires, they had a Motor Trend magazine, or probably one of the last ones.
Okay.
Right, and it had a Bronco on the front, and I commented, "Looks like an FJ Cruiser."
Kinda. It doesn't look like they're quite as big and bubbly as
but
a Cruiser.
It has the like same appearance, kind of.
In my opinion, it kind of looks like a cross between an FJ Cruiser, a G-Wagon, and like an LX 200 series.
Mm.
So,
I mean, the Broncos are ultimately iconic. Everyone knows that vehicle.
Oh, totally, yeah.
And like, I think it's unfortunately because of the incident on that fantastic freeway chase.
Yeah.
Like, everyone has like an image of what a Bronco should look like, because that's what they know a Bronco looks like. And now when they go messing with that, like, that's just messing with people's childhoods. You can't do that.
Well, that or they, you know, they're merging a Bronco 2 with the, you know, an OJ Bronco. Yeah, just maybe. Throwing them together.
Maybe. I did see out on the trail, I saw a really badass Bronco 2 that was Chop Top. And I thought it was an F-150, like a 90s F-150 as I was pulling up to it. And I was like, but I thought it was like bobbed and short bedded.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, this doesn't look quite like it. And I got up to it and I was like, that's a freaking Bronco. That's a Chop Top Bronco.
A
Bronco 2.
The little ones.
I don't think they're pretty small.
The Bronco 2s are tiny. They're like a Samurai.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Then
there's the OJ Bronco. Yeah.
OJ Broncos, they usually chop off.
It's like that's like Gen 2 Bronco, right?
Okay.
Like an 80s Bronco.
Yeah, like 80s to early 90s Bronco. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then there was a Bronco 2.
Yes.
After that?
Yeah, they made like a compact size.
Yeah, like
really?
A tiny one.
Yeah. Where have I been?
Not keeping up with your Broncos.
Yeah, not in the Ford land.
No. Oh, Jason's going to text me.
I know, right? So, Gear Wrench Corey, tell us a little bit about your past. Where'd you grow up? What brought you into the tool industry?
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. So, I grew up in Southern California, so hence the not so much off-roading. Although, down there, you have some access up to kind of Big Bear area and some of that area up there.
Yep.
So my dad actually raced open wheel race cars.
Ooh.
No way.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty badass.
Like just the quarter mile?
Like the full on, like indie.
Not a dragster.
No.
Not full blown dragsters.
No. It would be kind of like almost similar today, like the Indy Lights.
Okay.
So there's like
so
a,
on
a
cal-
there's
on a cal- race course.
Yeah, California Social Show. He's done Sonoma. He actually was funny. Like a year or two ago, we had an event. We get to do some of the NASCAR stuff through Gear Wrench. So I brought him to the track, and he was like, "Yeah, I remember this track, racing this track when it was dirt. Yeah, I flipped over that stand over there, and your mom had a heart attack, and that was like last time I got the race." So, you know, it's kind of cool seeing that. Like, so I grew up in a shop. my grandfather engineered all those cars and built them, so they would just fire it up and like. So I got hearing loss. Basically, no, I'm just kidding. I got hearing
loss. Is that why your headphones are up at max right now?
Yes, they probably are. So kind of like that background. So I got into industrial sales at a college I knew some of the companies, so there's a big one I won't mention, but yeah, so I got through there and they ended up moving me like three times and I ended up in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And so there was I was looking for some different work and kind of just a change of pace, wanting to work for a manufacturer. I see this little, thing like, hey, like, do you want to, you know, sell tools? Like, I guess I know I can sell tools. And, yeah. And so I went into it and man, it's different. You think you know things.
Yeah.
And then you just realize like everything is just completely different than what you have perceived. And I think that's probably the point of this podcast today.
Yeah.
Is
like today.
The
yeah.
perceived reality of things yes. is quite a bit different than
yeah.
sometimes people think about.
Such as you should never break things loose with a ratcheting wrench.
I left that. I was going to take that off. And then I heard episode 99. I'm like, I'm going to put this myth on there just to poke Jimmy. Just a little bit.
That's great.
I said something else wrong.
No, it's just it gets you riled up so much about it. So. Yeah.
Nice. Well, that'll be really cool. So you're a gearhead at heart. You kind of grew up around cars and motors and for the most part and that's really cool. That's kind of one of the fun things about the off-road industry and other car industries in general, right? Is that if you're any kind of a gearhead, you're going to appreciate everything in the automotive industries, right?
Yeah.
I think how you guys put it, like 99 was that, you know, people oftentimes end up moving out up here and stuff like that ended up getting 2x4x4 because it's the opportunities like,
yeah.
so much. So, it's, yeah. You know, I actually got some good personal friends that also were part of the Fresno group down there. So, like, I've seen the stuff and then you're like interested in it, mm-hmm. but then not really understanding like the kind of the 4x4 community and just kind of the cool, like, just seeing the rigs that you guys are building and the challenge that it is,
yeah.
you know, it's kind of, it's unique cause, and every setup's different. Every vehicle's Absolutely. Different. Every uh-huh. desire's different.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, it's very, very, very similar to all the different race cars out there.
Yeah.
You know, you have different just styles of like, yeah, I want to go fast. No, I want to go around corners for a long time drifting.
Sure.
Yeah. And your gear setups and ratios versus, you know, what you're going to put in like a dragster is completely different.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And like drift cars, they have crazy turn steering abilities, right? Like they can turn their wheels almost 90 degrees.
Holy crap.
Right?
Really?
Yeah. Cause when they're sliding sideways, they want to be pointing sideways.
We
gotta,
so we do a sponsorship
with Rad.
Yeah. Rad Industries.
Yeah.
The guy, he rocks a super mullet.
Yes, he does.
He's awesome.
Rad Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we could definitely, try and get you, some, guys out to the Long Beach event.
That'd be cool.
Yeah,
keep Jimmy on
his yeah. rig, yeah. dude. I want it. Would they let Bobcat out there? But I think his car was in the booth at yeah. SEMA.
He was,
which was really
yeah.
cool to see.
Yeah,
nice. What yeah. car? What car? That's the one you're talking about with the
his drift car was okay. in the booth at SEMA this year.
Yeah, I forget what I think.
I don't know what it is. I don't remember.
I want to say. I don't think it's a. It's not a Toyota. I think it's a.
That's why I don't want to say it.
Is it a pink Toyota Corolla? Because then
Dino would recover. Dino should do some research for us to figure it out.
Oh man, that's really cool. So yeah, let's take a quick break before we get into it. Reminder for everybody out there, we are running our month of Gear Wrench and Crescent Tools. So the giveaways here, $1,000 gift pack, a gift set for each winner, and we have 10 sets to give away thanks to Corey here. So we're going to be talking today a little bit about tool myths, so hang tight, we'll get into that. Make sure that you're checking out all the different ways to enter for the giveaways, each toolkit giveaway. I believe as of when this episode comes out on the Monday for episode 102, we are going to have the patron giveaway, the iTunes reviews giveaway, as well as this is going to be the start of the week for the first hashtag giveaway. The second hashtag giveaway. correct? Because we have one starting last week, last Monday.
Do we?
Yeah, I think we're okay. we're doing three hashtag giveaways. So yep. This is the second one here. So we will announce that hashtag at the end of this episode. So you got to make sure you listen to the full episode here because it's going to have something to do with the episode, I believe.
We will definitely be in a part of that of this episode.
Cool. Awesome. So hang tight. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be right on back. Oh, Dino. Dino's waving at me. What did you find?
Dino found, and I'm kind of embarrassed that I didn't know this. That
oh, yeah?
It's a Supra.
It is a Supra?
I thought it was a Supra. I thought it was, but yeah.
It is. Doesn't Lightbright Studios have a Supra?
Oh, I don't know.
I thought they had a Supra, the Jeep and their Supra, and they've been working on it, just been running a bunch of track times in the Supra.
I don't know. I don't follow them at all.
we'll have to double check that.
I only knew them as the Jeepers, so I was like, meh.
Yeah, check out. She does a lot of drag racing stuff as well. So.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and
I met her for a quick second at SEMA.
How'd
she was
go?
In the booth, a Tuffy booth, when I was at. They were giving me a tour of their Tacoma and all the lockboxes that they can put into Tacomas.
Uh-huh.
And then she was doing, they were going to video her in the booth and walk around, and I got to talk to her for a quick second.
Oh, nice.
She was nice. She was cool.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. I'll have to check that out. I'm pretty sure it was a Supra, one of the newer ones.
Okay.
But I could very well be wrong, so, because I just kind of glance over theirs. I don't pay attention a lot to their channel.
You're not looking at the car at all, are you?
Of course I am. All right, cool. All right. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right on back with the tool mix. Welcome back, ladies, gents, kiddos, everybody out there, to today's campfire discussion. As you guys heard earlier, we got Gear Wrench Corey here in the house, in the Heezy.
I took a Spanish away, and now he's going a different avenue.
It's called
Latin or something.
Snooplish.
Snoopalicious.
Snoopalicious. No, that's something else. Yeah. that's one of your drinks that you'll order at Touch Bros next time.
I'll send in that request. See what comes my way.
That'd be funny. So cool. Yeah, we have a fun topic today since. We found out from talking to Corey through how long we've been kind of chatting with you, hanging out, talking now, about 2 months, two and a half?
No, like since the start of the year.
Well, and then the pandemic happened and I had nothing to do and no one had nothing to do. Yeah. And all this podcast and content came out and then we were really talking.
There we go. So we found out very quickly that, there's a lot of unknown information out there about a bunch of the common tools that we use every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided, hey, let's do an episode during Tool Month here about some of the tool myths. What are some of those pieces of information that you think are correct when you're going out and using your tools or thinking about getting a specific tool for this specific use? Is that really the right tool for that use? And so, as we've been talking to Corey, we've been learning we've been using our tools very incorrectly. So, especially our flathead screwdrivers.
Yeah, especially screwdrivers.
He's shaking his head at us.
All right. I can't comment.
Oh, man. So, this is going to be a really fun episode. We have, it looks like 12 myths here that we're going to kind of run down. And we're going to learn, get a lot of knowledge bombs dropped on us, on you guys. So it's going to be really fun. I think it's going to be a good time. And I hope you guys learn something and get to laugh a little bit at Jimmy and I in the meantime. So,
And if you dislike anything we say, just shoot us an email.
Yep.
Jimmy or Tyler at snailtrail4x4.com. And we'll just forward those right over to Corey for you guys.
Yeah.
Funny story, you guys. Oh, you do have my email. Oh, no. You guys finally got my email.
Corey's like, I'm going to go turn my email off for a little bit here.
Send it during furlough week.
There we go. Oh, man. So, cool. Let's jump right in, shall we?
Okay.
All right. So, what is our first tool myth here?
Well, I'll start by saying this. Some of these are going to sound like they go against each other, especially number ones and two.
Okay.
But I did this purposely because I hear it all the time. So these are things that I hear all the time that I over a period of time, I just shake my head and just have to
just smile and
smile
nod.
Smile and nod.
Yeah.
So some of these here. All tools are the same. So a lot of these are common phrases. All tools are the same. It's a kind of common perception some people have is and they'll understand the tool market itself.
Mm-hmm.
So there are really kind of two categories of tools. There's what's called DIY tools and pro tools.
Okay.
Okay.
And so when someone's trying to buy some tools, you've got to figure out in your mind, what are you going to consider yourself or what do you want to put the investment in?
Okay.
Because a lot of times people will say, oh, this singular 20-cent socket uh-huh. is going to perform the same as, you know, since I can represent brand Gearwrench, it's going to be the same as Gearwrench, and mm-hmm. it's not.
Okay.
And there's a reason for those things, and you know, if you guys get really technical with it, but you know, we don't
what
have
would
all
be,
the time.
What would be some of those differences that make, let's just say sockets, just as an example, but like that could be related to other tools out there. Well, I would assume material that it's made out of.
Yes,
is the big one.
Yeah, that's a huge thing. So, what makes something a pro tool mm-hmm. is think about it this way. So, for your audience, you guys really have to think about: is it a tool that you're going to use more than once? Or are you going to use it a regular? So there's a market for DIY tools, as we call them, mm-hmm. or do-it-yourselfers. There's a market for that, and there's a reason that it exists.
Okay.
And it's not bad if you own DIY tools. I want people to think of that. But if you're going to be working on your rig and you're going to be doing different things, you probably want to consider investing into more pro tools as you get forward. The reason being is the strength and durability is like the number one thing.
Okay.
So a lot of questions people say, well, how do I know? Because there's a lot of tools out there that claim a lot of things. So the ones is like, well, how do I know if it's good or not? Well, there's two standards you could take a look at: ASME mm-hmm.
okay.
and ANSI standards.
And what are those?
Yeah. So ANSI standards are the safety standards that are like you would find in like a pair of safety glasses. So they have to be okay. ANSI rated, or gloves are ANSI rated. So that if something
are these ANSI rated,
your aviators are not ANSI rated.
Oh man.
And so what they do, like, to test these certain things to be ANSI rated is like, they'll shoot, like, a BB pellet at your glasses. And imagine if your BB pellet got hit with a safety glass, you know, uh-huh. it would be fine. Your aviators wouldn't quite make it up to the test and you'd be losing an eye.
Right.
Yeah. But ASME is basically the tool standard version of that.
Okay.
So it's an American standard of, you know, basically measures and so in, of engineers. I probably butchered that horribly.
Okay.
So it's really engineer standards that everything has to be put to that. So generally, most pro tools perform in the 150 to 200% greater than the ANSI ASME standard.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So that's a big so when we talk about strength and durability, that's the difference.
Okay.
So that becomes a very important when we really get into further down the list. You know, and we get to our hashtag later. Yeah. But
so are DIY tools more like they just barely meet the qualifications for ASME and ANSI?
So it's hard to say because it's all over the board. You have so many different tool manufacturers out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't even call a lot of them manufacturers. I would use the word brand.
Okay.
I'll get you guys trained to talk about brand.
Okay.
There's so many brands out there that are set for certain price range markets. So that's the question you have to ask yourself. Why is this at this price range? And that really kind of leads me to number two a little bit, but later. But there's certain things that are certain price ranges for reasons, because the benefits and the features. So with tools, for the most part, my rule, what I tell people is you get what you pay for to a certain degree. So there's a certain level that you get what you pay for. Now you can obviously overpay.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone knows is like, you don't, you know, as much as we like to have that Ford Raptor come down.
Specific brand.
Yeah. As long as we want there. That Ford Raptor out there and that heavy duty, we probably don't need to pay the price tag to get one from Australia over here.
Uh-huh.
As much as that thing looks awesome, it's just not going to happen.
I don't know. I might be willing to pay for a Ranger Raptor with a Mustang engine in it over here.
So how do you determine if somebody is a DIYer or should be moving up into the pro level? How does somebody like you draw the line for those people?
That's a great question.
Or where do you see those people falling?
If you're going to break out your tool set probably more than once a month, you probably need to look into some more pro tools.
Okay.
So I would say if DIY tools are for probably a project you're going to do once
mm-hmm.
and not do again.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you're just going to have that set of tools in your garage, you know, and it's just going to sit there for more majority of the time. You know, and so that's my kind of my definition of like a DIY tools is like.
So if it's somebody like, has a tool, you know, buys a socket set or something, but only uses it once a year,
yeah,
that they could probably do a DIY,
you
know, yeah, Harbor Freight brand or something.
I wouldn't wish that on certain people, but, on some of their stuff. So, really, it's kind of like more or less. It really depends on the project you're working on too.
Yeah.
If something's going to be, and I kind of draw this line here. If you're going to, drive something specifically.
And your life is going to depend on it. Working. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I would probably make sure I would have a little bit better tools than something like that. But if it's like a rinky dink, something outside the house that you're going to, you know, just need to tighten something up and it's not going to be a life or death situation.
Right.
Like, I don't see the point in buying super nice tools for that.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I see that on specifically torque wrenches. Yeah.
Yes, right? That we'll get to that. That's in the number there.
No, definitely. Because, I mean, if you have to torque down your brakes to a certain percent or your lug nuts on your wheels, Tyler, you know, which Why we've me? Talked about in the past. You know,
my lug nuts are always tightened.
Yeah. And Tyler likes to use the torque wrench so he doesn't over-tighten the lug nuts, which is actually a really good idea. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, these are good things to have. So, you know, you want a good quality measurement so that you're not doing it improperly for a device or a part of the vehicle that you are going to depend on, like the wheels moving and staying on the vehicle or your brakes working. And
Or my steering bolt staying in the, in the steering arm.
Steering components.
I think you make a good point of kind of also where the line is. Anything that's going to be measured or is going to have possibly in a calibration in the future is always important. You get pro versions of them.
So how do you... How do you tell the difference between those tool sets? Are they labeled on the packaging? I would imagine they're not labeled.
Where the ASTM
or ASME.
ASME, thank you. What's so ASTM? That's
just think.
Else.
Think like just like I make an ass of me.
Ass of me.
There you go.
Yeah. You would look and see if that has met those standards. You know, if it hasn't.
Is that listed on all the packaging? If they do, like
they're going to brag
never
about
noticed
it.
Noticed it before.
They're going to brag about it. Okay. They're going to put something on there. You're going to see that. But also, you can, some of the other features too.
Do they sell tools without that don't meet those?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you can find that out there. And that kind of brings me to point number two, and we'll kind of get to that, is that only buy tools from a tool truck. Okay. So it seems contradictory, right? But the reality is that you don't have to get quality tools from a tool truck. But most people buy them from a tool truck, especially mechanics that work on their trucks because they can trust, they know like, hey, this stuff is, I can find the guy if something goes wrong with these tools or vice versa. So there's advantages and gear wrench tools actually have people that have independent trucks that do our stuff. So I'm not saying it's a horrible thing, but most of the times you don't have to do that. So how do you find those good tools as well? You just got to look at really kind of, does this tool serve specific purposes in that. So what considers a pro tool is the different features and functions that it has. So it has a longer sleek handle, has different things on it, has more access for to be able to get into different things. They're going to make claims of strength, which is important. Make sure it has ASME underneath that. They're making claims of strength. And there's going to be a lot of different, and the biggest thing is they're going to have like everything. It's going to be full sets. So what you can see is maybe not like a DIY. DIYers are going to be missing a lot of pieces on it.
Gotcha.
So they may not have a full range on it. They may have only a very small offering on X, Y, and Z. You know, they may only have a ratcheting wrench that goes to, 9/16.
Right. Well, and I see that a lot on socket sets, right?
Yes.
Like you'll end up buying a socket, you know, set from somewhere and you're missing like all the even ones or something, you know, and you get all these oddballs and
missing the 14 millimeter. That's the most important one. Jeez.
Yeah. And, that's a good point to, you know, make sure that whole entire string is in there, everything that you're looking for.
But you don't have to do it to find that from a tool truck. There's many reputable distributors. A lot of mom and pop shops carry pro tools. You just have to look for them. You have to ask for, you know, different brands that you know that are that too. And I think that's also too important that you understand the brand that you're buying and what they are to understand. If you've never heard of a tool company before, do some research. Doesn't mean that they're not good, all right? Because there's new companies coming up all the time. But just do the homework on it and see what they are.
Okay.
And just be vigilant on what you're buying, because a lot of times people get hosed and they get even imitation of our products.
They're out there.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
So, I mean, which kind of leads to why do you need Pro Tools even more is like number three, right? You need to calibrate your torque wrenches and calibrate products with that. So if you're buying Pro Tools, it's going to be a lot easier for those things to happen. So Jimmy mentioned it in episode 99. He kind of let the cat out of the bag on that one. But that's one of those myths that are out there that people, you don't have to, you know, they'll say, well, I set it at zero all the time. I don't have to calibrate it. And they never get it calibrated, especially on a click style there. So what's in a click style is a spring and a pin. And as you guys know, what happens to shocks over a time period?
Right.
Yeah.
As you compress.
And springs. Yeah.
And springs.
Mm-hmm. They wear out.
Bobcat recently went through that, didn't he?
Yes. It did. Yep. They break. They wear out.
And you didn't notice that for a while, didn't you?
I didn't notice it until I got home.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew it didn't happen before the trip, you know, because I noticed what was the setup, but. Yeah, as soon as I got home, I was working on the rig. You know, I was like, "Oh, dang, my main leaf is broken. Like,
yeah.
The main spring that holds the vehicle up is pinched
yeah.
and holding my vehicle up."
With torque wrenches, it kind of happens like that. You don't notice it,
sure,
but oftentimes with springs or anything like that, it's the decompress and compress over a period of time. You needed to get it checked out and it may be replaced. But that's why I also, it was mentioned for, digital is just, it's the way of the future. It's the way to go on those things because you're going to have less problems with that. But a lot of times, most people like click style because they're just used to it. They like the clicking on it. They like, they're used to the range scales.
I think those people haven't used the digital ones yet then. Because the digital one from Gear Ranch is super nice. I love using that thing. So
one thing about people with tools, and this is why we're going to get a lot of comments, people are passionate in their ways and they've been doing it for a certain amount of ways for a long time.
That's true.
And that's the biggest thing for doing this podcast is talking about this is like some people are going to say, well, I've been doing this for 90 years this way.
Right. I've never calibrated my torque wrench.
Yeah, it just
works fine. Yeah, it works fine. But are you actually hitting the precise measurement?
Mm-hmm.
Only one way to find out. Go have that torque wrench calibrated and checked.
Yeah.
As you found out too, right?
Yeah. Yep.
But the other thing going back, circling back around, we're circling back around to Pro Tools a little bit, even on torque wrenches, is the plus or minuses on it. So that's why it's important to calibration, because there's a plus or minus on every torque wrench. So on the Pro ones, they're going to be in probably the 2 to 3 ranges. On your DYI, percentage of air.
Yep.
So that's percent of error. It's going to be, it has a percent of error of being 2% to 3% off, depending on which direction you go on.
Gotcha.
That's how the gears gear up.
Why is that?
The reverse?
Yeah, why is the reverse a little bit bigger of a percentage?
It's the way the, I believe, I'm not 100% sure.
And why do you need to torque a reverse?
that's a good question.
That's the great question. I think it has
to do... Well, left-handed Fred. Yeah, boom! Yeah. Answered it.
I think the way it has to do is with the way the pawls grab and the gear grab on it.
The amount of teeth on the inside.
Well, the way it rotates, even our 120 is a dual paw and a big gear in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just the way that the gears are lined up on that too. And I think it's just the standard. They always add in reverse an extra percent.
Interesting.
It's very minuscule, but it's enough that they put like 3%.
Yeah,
4%. So
it's like 1.99, but 2.14, and well, let's round up.
Yeah.
When you go with safety standards and things like that, so the differences between like a Pro torque wrench to one that you would find like a DYI torque wrench, they could be off 7 to 8%.
Okay.
Wow.
Jeez.
So then imagine that, right? That you're
if you're torquing something, say a Pittman arm at 120. You could be off as you could be down at 110 to 105,
and then if you haven't calibrated it in 4 years,
yeah, there you go,
and it's off,
and then it's off like another 10%.
Wow,
I don't know, I'm just making up that number, but it could. I mean, it might be.
Yeah.
So yeah, now you're 7 plus 10. You know, you're off 17% or something.
Yeah, I mean, usually they're when they're not that far off on some of them, but it's like they give that swing arc of that, but it just depends on how, what the material is inside, that we talked about before, mm-hmm. what kind okay. of spring they use, what kind of metal it is, what's kind of the pin that they use. Are they using the, more materials? Mm-hmm. It's going to cost more.
Right.
So then that's the cost that's in a lot of those things.
How do people go about calibrating their equipment? Where can they take it to get calibrated?
So there's a lot of things that you can do. Mm-hmm. The easiest one to probably do, and I think is probably enough for the kind of like, you know, the 4x4 community, mm-hmm. is you can buy a dash unit that just basically is just an electronic tester.
Okay.
And you can just, it will do it. It's a digital readout. It's just a gauge, and you'll can see like, oh, it's on, or if it's off, then okay. at that point. You can send it, like for us, we have facilities that can repair it for a cost.
Yeah.
Or you could find someone else that does certification. You can go in there and it's like 20, 30 bucks for those other locations. Right. Sometimes up to 50, depends on what work they're doing.
Okay.
So I've seen these little digital torque readers that you can put in line.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like you could have a breaker bar and then a digital torque reader and then your socket and then you'd be torquing it down. It would show you what torque you're hitting. So would one of those in essence work? So like say you set it to 90 and you said you want to, you know, you go into clicks and then you see what torque came out on the digital torque reader.
Yeah. So that's possible. Yeah. That's one way to do it.
Okay.
So there's the two main ones, that is acceptable in kind of in the industry is a tabletop mount unit, which as I said, is for the cheaper one. Mm-hmm. And then you actually have the full on machines, and we're coming out with both of those at some point, next year.
Okay.
So people can buy them and test them, but so they're just little test units, and there's a big machine that costs several thousand dollars, several thousand dollars. That you can actually, you could do a full diagnostic test. You can see, okay, this is at this load range and this load range here. It was off scale and you hook up the computer, it reads it all out. So those are those certification, ISO certification facilities. They're going to have that machine. What most people, which is generally fine, is that, you just need to see if it's off. I don't think anyone needs a certified torque wrench that in their own home shop.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to know what it's working at. Okay. Most people, that say, oh, I need a certified one. They want the certificate saying, hey, this is this. All of ours that come with kind of one already and was tested in the facility, but actually get a certified ISO one has to be tested and it's good for a full year. So that's what you see like construction workers and stuff like that.
Only a year.
Okay.
Yeah, it's only a year.
You have to get it recertified every year?
Every year.
If you're in for that market or that...
For professionals, they do it every year.
Wow.
I would recommend probably... It depends on how much you use it. So if you're using it few times a month, I would do it a year, every year. Okay. If you maybe use it once every few months,
mm-hmm.
2 to 3 years, it just depends on that, how much you're going to use it. But if you haven't used it even in like 2 years, I would probably test it.
Wow.
Just to see where it's at. Cause the springs can seize, they can do different things. So it's just always good. Anything that, is putting out a reading of anything mm-hmm. like that, it's important to do that. And I would even, with digital, I would probably look at it a little bit.
How does the digital work? Is it still dependent on springs and stuff in there, or is it using a resistance, an electrical resistance in there? And
so it's all digital inside of it. So it equates the pressure pounds that are coming from within in there. So there's no spring in there clicking it. So what it's doing, it's all digital in that.
Yeah.
So that does not, so you do not need to get that recertified, in our opinion.
Uh-huh.
Some people still do it just to have the paperwork there, especially the pros, they want to cover themselves.
Yeah.
But that's why going digital, I would probably wouldn't even have to worry about that for like 5 to 10 years. You just make sure, like, is the board still working? Is it still reading out properly?
Okay.
There's nothing wrong. You don't have to reset it at zero, right?
That's, right.
Like, yeah. So that's the biggest problem that goes wrong with a torque wrench is someone leaves it out at zero for, a few hours or full, like a day or two. And then someone comes back and puts it at zero. Well, you could have just deformed the spring.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Good to know. So that's why, cause I've always heard, especially with click type torque wrenches, you always want to set them back to zero when you're done. I've never understood why.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew that it would kind of prematurely wear it out, but that makes complete sense. If it's all on a spring-loaded thing, you're just stretching that spring out the longer you have it sitting. So
yeah,
it ruins it all.
It may not, like when you say, like if you don't set it zero, it's not a may not, it will.
Yeah.
Like you've got our torque wrenches, if you don't set it at our click style, like you get like 48 hours before the springs start deforming, which is high in the market.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, like that's really high in the market if you have like a day or two and on. Most,
I mean, you could think of it like if you ever take a part of ballpoint pen, the springs inside ballpoint pens, you pull those apart for 5 minutes, even you let it go. It's deformed. Jeez, you're
was
done.
Somebody bored in an office meeting at one point?
I made a lot of those into spitwad shooters and pen shooters when I was little.
I'm going to do a quick little plug for the Gear Wrench Digital one right now because I absolutely love the fact that it vibrates.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I've been working in the shop and I've been having the music up and I actually, and the beeping noise that was happening with the torque wrench was going with the music. And I didn't notice it until it vibrated in my hand. And then I looked down and I noticed that it was green, red on the digital face, which means I was in the range that I needed to be at, you know, and then, you know, then I noticed it was a solid beep, which, you know, at that point. So it does. So the click style will click at you and it'll like have that gap of freedom, but the digital one, not all, it'll beep at you slow, a slow beat to a solid beat when you're at the range. It'll change from green to red and it will vibrate when you're at the specific
torque. All three auditory, visual, and feel notifiers.
And that's what makes it a pro tool.
Yeah.
So that's a big difference. So you may get one or two on another digital torque wrench that's not, and that is fine. It may suit you. That's fine. Mm-hmm. It's each to their own. But at the same time, that's the difference between a pro tool and also too, that's actually with a digital, you actually get a lot, more, you can actually get closer to your point. Cause a lot of times after you go real hard and then you hear the click and you feel the click and boom, and you're still going.
Yeah.
But with the indicator on a digital, you can set it to start beeping at 25% if you really want to get really slow it down. You want to grandma it in there. So you can put it at 80%, realistic 85%, and you'll start slowing up to where you're at, and you can actually, boom, dial in exactly right.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. It is. Nice. That's really cool. So what about the number four myth, which is they don't really make tools like they used to?
Oh, I hear that all the time.
Right?
So
this
I completely agree
wrench
with
this. Or whatever is blah, blah,
right?
blah. Like,
because, you know,
the new stuff, I'm cracking these sockets all like crazy, and I have this socket I've had for 50 years and it's never had any issues.
Right, and my socket wrenches are all 12 tooth, and now we're getting 90 tooths.
Uh-huh.
You know?
That's true. I mean, I guess that is true. Yeah.
So, I hear this one a lot, and this is going to get people riled up here. This is the one that's going to get
is it.
Awesome.
This is it.
Send all your emails in. We will forward them on to Corey.
So, I think there's part of this is partly true. Mm-hmm. I will say this. Yes. And for certain, we don't make tools we like that we made before because we got better materials. Okay.
Right.
We got better
digital torque wrenches.
Yeah.
They're awesome.
Like we just spent like 20 minutes talking about a digital torque wrench, which was not there beforehand. Mm-hmm.
Well, shoot, even the clicky style torque wrenches weren't there beforehand, right? Because for a while there, they just had that bar style when you would see the deflection of one bar and the other bar would stay still and you'd have to like look at it and see where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, continue on.
Yeah, the main one we get it on is like wrenches, ratchets, and combo wrenches too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then for those, that comes down to the metal.
It comes down to the metal, and it also comes down to what tool are you using? Because before, there wasn't really a DIY market in hand tools. It was very hard to get, there was just good and better.
Okay.
And so that's where I'm saying it's partly true. Okay.
Okay.
So the tools that were out there were good and better. But if you go and like kind of the point we're saying is if you go towards pro tools, you're going to find that, these are a lot better.
Gotcha.
Right. But if you are like, these tools are cheap, I'm just going to buy them. Yeah. Those tools probably aren't, you know,
the same quality as what they used to
good as they used to be.
Yeah.
You know, because now there's a DIY market, a cheaper market out there that people are getting into and breaking, and they they never actually purchased the good style.
Hold on. So you're saying my set that I got from IKEA to put my bed together is not the same quality as what Gear Wrench has out there
right now? Have you ever noticed that you strip that Allen bolt, that Allen head thing? When
I've gone through so many of those.
From IKEA? You're like, yes. What the hell? Like, yeah. You gave me a tool to put this thing together, and I'm stripping the tool when I'm putting this together, and I've done it like, you give me 10 things that I need to use this tool with, and I'm through number two.
Yeah. Which I just learned recently, but FYI, those are not called Allen wrenches. What are they called?
They're called Hex.
Hex.
Allen is a great brand because it is part of the Gear Wrench family.
Nice.
There you go.
But Allen.
A Hex bit?
Hex bit.
Or a Hex.
It's Hex key.
A Hex key.
That's what it is.
Yeah, it's a Hex key. So you can get actual Allen keys, the original.
I have some.
In your Gear Wrench 239 piece sets, the 230, I think some of the 232 piece sets, you get the original ones. They're really hard to find now.
I think we have the 239 piece set in the kit giveaway, right?
I think you guys did that one a while ago.
Though. Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Never mind.
Something like that.
I think maybe it was mine that I got. Yeah.
Okay. The Gear Wrench sent us.
Cool.
So continue. Yeah. So they don't, the idea that they don't make it like they used to, and it's partly true. Even Pro Tools, we don't make like they used to. They're not heavy hunks of metal anymore.
Okay.
So, they're not really pitted, you know, pieces of metal. You get out an old wrench from even the early 90s. It's quite a bit heftier and heavier. And we're not making wrenches any less strong. Actually, we're making them stronger. They're just sleeker profile. They have more ergonomics on it, and they actually are thought out designed, to solve a problem.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of times people get caught up on is wrenches and things that they're using for the wrong purpose. Like, okay, this one was designed to solve this problem.
Yeah.
And you're trying to use it for everything.
Yeah.
And so it's just like,
so I feel like a lot of those just big hunks of metal from 50 years ago are stuff where it's like a screwdriver and you can use that thing to pry open anything you want.
Right.
Whereas nowadays,
all of these are hammers.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Everything in this drawer is a hammer. That was kind of where I was thinking that myth kind of came from, is that people are trying to use a pipe wrench as a hammer. And it's so.
Yeah, and that's partly true. Like they're big and they're bulky, and so you're able to probably do some weirder things with them. But overall, like not using them for the right purpose, especially now, like it's gonna damage it.
Yeah,
hammering with a pipe wrench when there's so intricate pieces onto it. Like there's specialized teeth on it, and you wonder why your teeth are broken because you keep on hammering on the side of it.
Right.
Yeah.
So in essence, what you're saying is that the tool market, in a way, has been kind of streamlined into perfecting the tool for its job.
Yes.
Correct. And so, you know, like we don't need, you know, a 1-inch diameter ratchet, you know, because we know that the amount of stress that ratchet's going to go through, and we can slim the handle down to be the best size that won't break before the ratchet end breaks, you know? Mm-hmm. So that, in a way, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, kind of leads all to the other idea, like everyone always has chrome everything.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which number five, is the idea chrome is all you need. And I've been telling you guys, and I think I surprised you guys with this one.
You did.
Actually, and I would recommend anyone starting out in any shop, always go with impact. I think I'm gonna get people on this one too.
Yeah.
That are gonna get upset. there's a kernel of truth on this one. Back when impacts really first started becoming popular, they're out there, they were bulky, they weren't great.
Okay.
But as technology, as tools get better.
Yeah.
The one biggest improvements is on impact products. And then the other trend that's also happened in the market is the battery power is gone so much better. Battery power tools have come so...
battery technology is awesome nowadays. Yeah,
and so when you're working on your rig and you're using no matter what it is, any kind of power tool on there, it's very important that you put an impact tool on there.
Okay.
So we as companies have to add to... adapt and make impact slimmer.
Okay.
Put specialized coatings on there so the grease can wipe off easier.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get them in all the sizes that you can get chrome on. And guess what? You could still put a ratchet on them and they work perfectly fine.
Okay.
And the biggest difference is they won't shatter and break
right.
when you put an impact gun on it or you put too much stress on it through battery power.
So what's the difference? I know the difference. It's a molecular difference, but can you talk about the difference there between the chromes and the impacts?
So it's the material and how it's hardened. I won't get into the whole chrome mold, all that stuff. But so when you, especially you harden a tool and you put chrome over it,
okay.
it requires a certain hardness. And so, yes, chrome tools have, in theory, a longer shelf life than impact tools. But if you're going to be using your tools, like I'm assuming most people are going to use their tools pretty regularly, it's good to have impacts, especially if you're going to put battery tools on there. Because what happens with the chrome, because it's harder, what an impact does, it has an anvil and it pounds on the back of it and causes that tool, that socket or whatever that tool is on to vibrate. And then that's what causes the shatter. So even on like hammer drills or even regular newer drills, they have some kind of hammering point to it, or the torque is so high on the motor that it causes some vibrations that could cause them to crack. And so like that's another thing. People say, well, they don't make them like they used to. And you find out they're using a brand new Milwaukee or DeWalt battery, you know, super nice, you know, impact gun.
Yeah.
And they're going to town on it. And you're like, oh, yeah, you're using a really high powered tool on this. It's shattering the chrome. Where back in the day, it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah.
The battery you plugged in your tool, you plugged it in or something like that. And it wasn't that bad of a thing that happened, but now you don't want to get shattered in your eye or your face. That's a big no-no.
Yeah, or your aviators won't hold up to your ANSI standards.
So. That's right.
Yeah. So are there, you know, like, so we can put extensions onto our ratchets, you know, and then we're using cheater bars in a way, you know, is that threatening the chrome as well?
Yes, that's all the way down.
Oh, was it? I was trying to lead into the cheater bars.
Oh, no, that's number six. Yeah, you're right. Number six. Hashtag don't use cheater bars, right?
Yeah. Yes. And there's our hashtag, ladies and gentlemen.
For this week's tool giveaway.
Yes.
Hashtag don't use cheater bars.
So post up a photo on Instagram. Use hashtag don't use cheater bars. Preferably use a photo of a tool or even you using it or not using a cheater bar. Post don't use cheater bars, and then what we're going to do is we are going to randomly pick somebody from that hashtag to win the Gear Wrench set.
I'm going to post a picture of Dino because he's a tool.
There you go.
And now he's looking at you angrily.
I know, right?
Yeah. So, aren't all ratchets and all tools strong enough to handle a cheater bar?
So this is where, again, pro tool versus not. And that's why, you know, we don't want photos of you trying to break your tools either.
Right?
It was funny. So companies design tools to be very, very strong, especially pro tools. And part of that design, I don't know if anyone's part of any engineers out there, they're probably going to give you all the specs and stuff like that. But,
Constantine.
He's probably going to say, yeah, maybe, or he's got that wrong. But like certain lengths of ratchets and we put the diameter, certain thing to the length that it's going to be. And we forge it to that with the metal type. So everything's thought out and engineered to reach those goals and tested to those strengths. And when you add or extend something onto it and you add more leverage to something, it's going to cause it to break. So even on breaker bars, right? So I think that a lot of times people think, oh, it's a breaker bar, it's safe. Even when you use breaker bars, it's important that you don't use a cheater bar because it's designed at a certain length to hold a certain pound rating.
Okay.
And I think we've all used cheater bars. Every single one of us have.
I have.
I'm not going to admit it.
It's a hard thing to break. Yeah. And we try to design around it most we can, but we still like it don't ever encourage it because it's very important that we don't do that because we just basically ruined that one guy. an engineer is like raising his fist in solidarity right now. Like you just ruined that whole design of that tool because it's there's workload limits to everything. I mean, you guys know as you try to winch something, there's workload limits. You have to do that. The same thing for tools. There's workload limits,
okay.
And especially in geared tools, it's important that you understand that. Like, so like the idea of more teeth is stronger. So that's number seven. More teeth is stronger and for tools or for ratchets. Mm-hmm. Or ratcheting wrenches. Not always the case. It's because when you got geared tools, it can only take so much as the teeth go onto it. So, idea, some people say, then I'll just give me the 16 tooth ratchet then.
The 12 tooth, yeah.
Give me a 12 tooth, which is also not true. Uh-huh. So the design of the head, the design of the material, and also what the gear is made out of is very important in a ratchet or, okay. or a ratcheting wrench or when you're designing a tool for that. Mm-hmm. So, like for instance, you guys test out the 90s are like mm-hmm. insanely stronger than what our 84s were and extremely even stronger than what Jimmy's favorites are, the 42. Uh-huh. So the push yeah. buttons. So they're actually really stronger. But 90s about the amount of teeth you can go before you start weakening it. So there's some out there that claim like, I got 122 tooth
and that's on ratchets, right?
Ratchets and combination ratcheting wrenches.
Okay, because yeah. I was going to say the torque wrenches you guys have are 120 tooth.
And let me explain that one there. So that's actually not 120 tooth in there. We call it that. We accept it. People say that, but it's actually 120 positions. So what's in there is a 60, like a beefy 60 gear.
Okay,
and then so think of like how so whatever grabs, called a pawl inside of it. It grabs the gear. So there's two of them double stacked on it. And they alternate every quarter turn.
I see.
So
cheater.
Right?
Someone designed it. Someone designed it.
Don't use cheater bars.
Not cheating if you make a design. So it's actually, that's actually our strongest ratchet. The 90s are pretty up there now too that we just came out with. But the 120s are what we consider the Cadillac.
Yeah.
Right.
They are nice to use. Mm-hmm. Cool. What about more power or bigger is better? So more power is better or a bigger tool is better or anything like that?
Yeah. I put this one on here for the power tool folks. Mm-hmm. everyone wants
to move. We have a few of them out there.
Yeah. everyone wants to move up to like 18 volt and sometimes you just don't need it. Like, it's just too much. You're going to end up ripping out whatever you're working on, especially a lot of like vehicle work, like what you guys do and 12 volts perfectly fine.
Okay.
Especially with the new batteries, like the slim batteries and the mm-hmm. electronic motors, it's just not needed. You can get really, really good power, what you used to get from 18 volts, and it's a lot more compact.
That's true.
And so as you guys are like going out and on the trail, it's easier to pack, it's easier to hold just in case you have emergencies. The batteries are smaller, they don't take as long as to charge.
Can you jump start your vehicle with a 12 volt though?
Oh. Get touche on that one. Yeah. If you get enough of them.
You could pack them together in I think it's not in series, the other one in parallel. Mm-hmm. I think that compounds them.
I might want to argue this one. There's definitely, what's the next step? Up from a 12 volt, if you need a more torquey, application, like some things, like a nut on a pitment or a ring and pinion nut, it goes up to like 250 foot pounds of torque. Mm-hmm. A 12 volt ain't going to get it up there.
You'd be surprised if you get, so this is again, difference between DIY and Pro Tools.
Okay.
Okay.
So there are
some. I have a DIY impact.
So driver. So if you look at the brushless motors on some of these, they're worth the money. Honestly.
Okay.
And I don't have a dog in that game.
Yeah.
But they're definitely worth the money. The new lithium batteries, they get you so much more power. Mm-hmm. You're right. Like back in the day, like it was that, but the same thing. And then also like going back on the hand tool size, like sizing up like to that 1-inch, like breaker bar, 1-inch driver is not needed. Because a lot, like sometimes you'll see people reduce down, and they want to get that leverage, that 1-inch. Well, I'm going to really break it. Well, you got to remember what you're putting on.
You're sizing down to that.
Yeah, I've got a 1-inch driver, 24-inch bar, and I'm using it on an 8mm bolt.
Yeah. Yeah. People are shaking their head. I've never seen anyone do that. I've seen it happen.
Right. Yeah. And I think, just going back to the electronic driving things, I think there's you know, like, yeah, 12 volt, you know, for the most part, you know, you can do 80% of what's out there and whatever you need, you know, and then you can go into some of those more specialty, bigger, heavier duty things.
Yeah.
And that falls right in line with, you know, bigger is better for, you know, driving like an 8mm bolt, right? It's like, yeah, you don't need a 1-inch driver or a 3/4-inch driver for that. You can use your 1/4-inch driver for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because you're going to, otherwise you're going to break the bolt. But if you have a 2-inch, you know, diameter nut, you know, that you have to put on, you know, then you're going to need something a little bigger because the torque of that, that you're, that's going to need to be torqued to a higher
yeah.
amount.
Yeah.
There's what your 1/4-inch can handle, probably.
Yeah. There's certain things that, you know, I think there's pros and cons to owning both battery platforms, but a lot mm-hmm. of times people just go, I'm just going to buy the biggest, baddest,
sure.
most torqueyest.
Yeah.
tool out there and you're like, well, mm. yeah.
right? Yeah, no. And then, yeah, you don't, like, you know, you use this brushless 18 volt, you know, 500 foot pound torque thing on an 8mm bolt and you're just going to spin it and break it. You know, one of my buddies,
I was Blake, planning on using one of those to get my exhaust manifold nuts off. Mm-hmm. Is that a bad idea?
Yeah, probably. Well, but what we'll okay. use is the bolt biters.
There you go. Jimmy said it before I could get it out. No, those
things. Because those are impact rated,
they
too.
They are impact rated, yes.
Okay.
And they will grab those bolts like mm-hmm. nothing.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
And they don't actually cut the bolt.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was more concerned about just snapping the studs.
Yeah.
trying to always, pull
always,
those off.
But that's all. We're also a big believer in the
lube.
Yep.
We are too. What a coincidence.
We don't make any, don't have any in the game, but we like the penetrating oils that we highly recommend anyone working mm-hmm. on anything always use that. It's going to save your tools in the long run.
Yeah.
It's just going to create so much less headaches when you're working on a vehicle. Mm-hmm. When you lube up your vehicles properly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you guys did the best line racing like test. Like that was like amazing. Like
that was
that.
Crazy.
Like, yeah. Like, so you see like the importance of that. Like, you know, in anything that moves, and obviously there's a risk of seizing it up.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's important that, that, you know, you understand with that, you know, just more because you put more power on it doesn't mean it's also going to break loose either.
Yeah,
right.
True.
You'll probably more likely break it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about, so say I am using a certain tool from somebody and I do snap something, or I'm like, this tool sucks. Am I then able to umbrella that to the rest of the line from that company?
No, we hear that a lot. And so mm-hmm. I'll give you an example that always sticks to my head. So I had a guy, he was upset with us over, we had a combination ratcheting wrench, and I think we still make it. And on the opening end, it has a little bubble indentation. So it's so what it does in the opening end. It allows you to
rotate it
and release off and yeah. go there. He was upset because there was now he couldn't do it. He couldn't do it in reverse. In reality, just flip it over.
Flip it over. Right. Yeah.
But that was too much work for him. And so therefore all of our tools were garbage.
Interesting.
So it's like, we sell in combination ratcheting wrenches. I think we sell, I want to say like 12 to 14 different styles.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Size ranges and different mm-hmm. things. And that kind of goes back to what we were talking about before. Like, you know, using the right tool and, you know, the better, you know, tools are out there. There's ones that are made for specific reasons, like mm-hmm. for industries there, that are important. And that's one of them. Like it was for anyone who's ever been stuck that's had to use an open end.
Yeah.
That wasn't able to, you know, the kid of ratcheting on it. So, but they needed to stay on the bolts without, you know, doing that. So it was pretty popular when it came out, but that's not the only one we had.
Yeah.
Right.
You still have a regular one. You just don't get that specific one. Get the one that you can reverse with
and,
as well.
And we hear that from yeah. like other brands out there. Well, I used this one particular tool and it was awful. And it wasn't the right thing for the application, or they just mm-hmm. got, maybe happens every now and then, defective things come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see though sometimes that with that wrench specifically, that one that has a little bubble that lets you rotate, there's times when you can't get enough of a turn, mm-hmm. right? And then you have to flip the wrench over to get some more turn and then go back to the original position so then you can continue to turn the bolt or nut around.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when you don't use that wrench.
But, yeah.
right? But if it's the only one they have, that's, you know, then.
Yeah.
Bummer.
These are the people I deal with daily, Jimmy.
Yeah. right. That shouldn't be the first wrench somebody buys, is, I guess, the answer for that question. But
I won't tell you where he worked at and what he did, but
please don't.
Cool. So what about number 10, which is I'll just buy it online because they'll have what I need at a better price because I'm buying it direct.
Ooh, so this is a big one.
Yeah.
Okay. These people are going to get maybe upset at me.
So this one, because I kind of work in sales as well for my day job, right? And so knowing that, you know, the big push of consumers' habits nowadays, mm-hmm. and differentiating and trying to go direct to manufacturers, and a lot of manufacturers going direct to consumers now. How does that impact how the tool industry is working? Is that really this myth here? Is that true, false?
So I think there's one particular brand that people think they're doing it that way, and mm-hmm. it's not happening. There's always a middleman, uh-huh. and it's always in that tools. I had a discussion with Jimmy before you and Dino got here.
Don't lump me in a car with Dino. I do not travel anywhere near that Corolla.
I didn't accuse you of that.
I see that car come down the road, and I pull off and go hide somewhere.
Well, the idea of like someone like reaching out and saying, I want to buy like one socket from you. I just need this one socket, mm-hmm. which is fine. Mm-hmm. We want everyone to have our tools.
Yeah.
But the feasibility of us who make millions of sockets a week, you know, to hundreds of thousands of different items to be like, hey, I'm going to pull this one order and do that. And some companies are able to do that, that are smaller, that are starting up, mm-hmm. that are going like that direct to the consumer market, but mm-hmm. you're just not going to, and you're not going to get a great price. Even if you did do that, you're going to pay a lot of shipping, a lot of handling.
And say, cause it's a big, back end work to do custom one-off stuff in production rather than mass sets of stuff. It's way, way more efficient resource and time-wise to do sets.
So how were we able to get a bunch of 10 millimeters?
You knew the right guy. I sent a lot of them.
Yeah.
I think everyone knows that knows me in the area knows, you know, the CT truck. I get stopped all the time. Someone's like, I just want to buy one thing. I was like, I don't have a way to sell you, dude.
Yeah.
Right.
So, like, I'm sorry. Like, I'll give you, like, the ladies that you mentioned in episode 99, they were so, you know, like, where can I buy these? Can I buy these tapes off of you? I'm like, just have them. I'd rather give it to you than that. So don't hunt me down because I don't always have free tools on me.
Yeah.
But, right.
You see a Crescent truck driving around, someone Sacramento, waving flag them down.
I'll get something free.
I need a night eye.
Yeah.
But what about private label items then?
So that's a great myth there too. So in one of those, like Costco's really started the trend with their Kirkland brand.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
Like everyone's getting the private label brand, but the reality people don't realize is like those, like their private labels, they don't make anything.
Yeah. They outsource purchasing from other manufacturers, right?
Would you say is it a Toyota Lexus thing?
100% is a Toyota Lexus thing. So I was funny you mentioned that. My mother is looking for a new vehicle, and we pointed out a Lexus, and the kids were like, "Oh, Lexus! Grandma, why don't you get a Lexus?" She's like, "Oh yeah." I was like, "Well, that's just a fancy Toyota." And it's kind of like private labels sometimes are the reverse of that.
Okay,
and so sometimes it could be good, but the problem there's three really like things that a private label tries to do. One, gives tremendous value, not a horrible thing to offer. Yeah, try to do. Mm-hmm. Two, they try to get their products at the cheapest cost. Maybe not so that. And three, they're constantly bidding and trying to get that cost the same and mark up their margins.
Yeah.
So a lot of times, and people have seen this with one major brand. I won't mention it now because I don't have any affiliation with it. where they said, "Oh, this brand," and it was at a certain department store for a long time, mm-hmm. and they were all excited, you know, that, you know, the changes that were happening with it. But they saw in the early, I think it was in the early 90s, it was made in a USA facility in Texas, and by a major brand. And they were like, it was great quality stuff. A lot of people still have it. Uh-huh. And then early 2000s, they decided to bid it out and took it away from that manufacturer. And went overseas, and then that's when people said, "Oh, you don't make it like they used to." Right? Okay. Particularly that brand happened a lot, and then they went back to that manufacturer because they took it overseas, which wasn't a bad thing. Like, just because a tool's not made in USA does not make it any lesser standard either. Mm-hmm. It just depends on how it's made, who's making it, where it's, you know, what are
the quality
design
control, the quality of control, the factories, the
design work, mm-hmm. which makes it really, you know, harder for some things to do. But some gear inch stuff is made USA. Some of it's really made globally.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just, and a lot of the other brands out there are made globally now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's not a single,
there's so many parts that go into some of these things.
Yeah.
Right?
Not a single brand out there is made all in the USA, even though they may stamp it on there. I think we talked.
I was just about to bring that up.
a certain group of people they decide to put underneath certain things like, oh, it was
manufactured,
with global resources.
Oh yeah,
made in the USA with global resources, something like that.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Which really could be applied to anything. It could be 98% of the tool was global, and then that the outer casing of it or something was made in the US, and they can put that on it. So,
In regards to the private labeling, though, you're saying that it could, the private label model could be the lesser quality that is being sold from the higher standard.
Yeah. So a lot of times there are things that aren't obviously put on the pro models that are going to be there. It's like a stripped down version of that. So like you take a look at it, like the difference, I think the best Toyota comparison is like the Camry versus the
Avalon,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, so the Avalon's got all those features on it. You know, you're going to get full leather, baby. Uh-huh. You're going to get the best sound system in it. You're going to be cruising like no other. It's going to be smooth. And the Camry is a good workhorse. And so there's nothing necessary. You could get that. But there's also the difference between the Toyota Avalon and Camry, though, is private label. Sometimes you do get inconsistencies. So if you are fond of one style of tool, the next time you go back to that store, it may not be the same.
They could have changed the design slightly because they outsourced and bidded it out to somebody else.
Yeah, because who owns the designs or who owns the dies? Gotcha. It's not that company. They're not making it.
Yeah.
And so you'll see a lot of times it changes.
So it's pretty much like a licensing deal each time is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
A lot of those house brands. So that's why it's important to understand the difference between like actual manufacturers mm-hmm. and brands, because it's a big deal. Like, yeah. You understand there's really like probably four or five of us out there, uh-huh. maybe six, that actually make tools.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I never really thought about that. I guess it makes sense. You can license anything out, but I never really thought of tools as being a licensing deal kind of industry. But yeah.
So are you, can I ask if Gear Wrench or Apex has a licensed brand under it?
There are several out there that I won't get into.
Nice.
So there are some. And the reason why I won't get into it, because I don't know when someone's going to listen to it, and we may not have that in uh-huh. the future. So
yeah, okay.
we do a lot on and off. And so Gear Wrench, so people know, Gear Wrench is the parent company, is the largest manufacturer of hand tools, like specifically hand tools in the world.
Interesting. That's cool.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Wow. I got a little chip on my shoulder now. I've been working with them for so long.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So, can you break a bolt with a ratchet?
Oh, yes. See, I put, there originally was like 11.
I feel like this was a targeted question that's been added on for somebody.
So the background on this, there was probably a thread between me and Jimmy about like 9 or 10 questions back and forth, and him debating us. I could just imagine him hammering down as he's typing, his fist down on the table, arguing. So the question, and I'll explain why. So the number 12 is break it with that ratchet or ratchet wrench for me. Like breaking a bolt loose,
mm-hmm.
Is a common thing. Oh, just break it for me. Don't matter. It won't work. You know, it doesn't matter that much. And to a degree, I'll give you this caveat to what Jimmy says. Like, yeah, if you hand tighten it and you immediately reduce it and put it in reverse, yeah, that's fine. But what happens in reality is you're driving with it, especially your vehicle. It's heating up. It's turning. It's twisting. There's no guarantee it's that same pound pressure that you put on. That you
took probably
it on.
A lot more.
It's a lot more. So as metal heats and stuff like that expands, mm-hmm. The grooves are into it a little bit tighter. If you didn't lose your lube properly, you may be seized up.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be harder to break that loose. And as you take anything, as we mentioned before, anything geared, it's not designed to break. It's a geared item. So the more strength, the more pressure you put on each tooth of those gears, guess what's going to happen? It's going to wear it down, or it's going to break it loose, because there's, you know, it just as, you know, anything that seizes up in a vehicle, if you have your gear seizing up because you don't have any lubrication in there, or if it's just caught or it just catches, what's going to happen?
Yeah, something's going
to
fail.
So what about torque wrenches? Because torque wrenches are made to go up to like 250 foot-pounds. Well, some, I mean, like the half-inch drive digital torque wrench that I have is made to go up to 250 foot-pounds, I believe. So if is that okay to go reverse on that?
And break things with?
And break things with it?
No, you're not ever to break with a torque wrench.
Why not? I was leading into that.
Why not? Well, let's think about it. It's a spring-loaded or a calibrated a tool that you don't want to put too much stress on in that area that way. Mm-hmm. So while it's designed, yeah, you can go up to 250 pounds. But if you don't know what it's at when you're breaking it loose, you could. I wouldn't take the risk for that, especially on a torque wrench. So just use a breaker bar, you know, and for just to break it loose. Mm-hmm. So ratcheting wrenches and ratchets are for speed. That's really what they're designed for. It's quick on and off. So that's why there is the reverse. You go up to it and you can hand tighten it, but we still even recommend it with a breaker bar, tightening it if you want to make it really tight for scare, but use it that way.
Okay.
Breaker bars can be used both ways.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. It's just a piece. It's just a leverage tool at that point. So it's just over the ease of the tools. But we realize, and again, going back to, I'm going to harp on this Pro Tool thing, right? Uh-huh. You hear me say Pro Tool like 100 times.
Right.
We should every time that he, too bad we didn't announce this. Every time he said it, you need to take a shot.
Or Corey has to give away a socket or something.
Yeah, there you go.
That'd be the Corey game. Anytime Jimmy says and things of that nature, you take a shot. Anytime Tyler giggles at a reference of some kind, you take a shot. Every time Corey mentions Pro Tool, you get a socket.
So when you, well, yeah, so when you take
10
a look,
mil.
Yeah, yes, the 10 mil.
Yeah.
So when you take a look at like tools that are designed for, you know, automotive specifically or things that are heavier duty. Mm-hmm. So heavy duty tools, you can probably get away with a little bit more than you normally would, but you know, we just don't recommend it. And we don't advertise what strength things break at. It's going to be very surprising how strong it is, but we just don't want, just for the safety of everyone. Like you just don't want to do that. Like as you guys know, if you know that you can, I guess it's maybe a little bit of the 4x4 community.
I can take this 3/8 drive up to 500 foot pounds. Hell yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah. It's like trying to take, you know, something up the Rubicon. Like could you force your truck up there, up that hill? Like Bobcat the other day, like you could probably make, you know, go up that hill that way, but you know, you're probably going to maybe break something, you're probably going to back off and say, you know,
or roll over.
You know, so it's like, it's one of those things. It's like, hey, let's make sure, like, can I for sure do this?
Yeah.
You know,
And I think it just comes down to, is it the right tool for the right job?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and I think you actually, now that you've said that the ratcheting styles is for speed, it really makes a lot more sense. Yeah. Right, like this is to get you close to where you need to be, and then you need to fine tune it with the an actual tool
designed
for
fine tuning,
right? And that's sort of the way I see it. Is like, oh, I know, like I can get fairly close to what torque, you know, I feel like I'm at with my hand. Like I know what ranges I need to be at within 10 foot pounds or something with a ratcheting wrench, and then I need to use a torque wrench to get it to where I need it to be,
or even a box wrench if you want to really get it, use a hand strength or something like that. And box wrenches are still great.
Yeah, just don't have a little bubble on them, Corey.
Yeah, apparently not.
Mm-hmm. Nice. That's cool. We're getting deep into the episode, running a little bit long on time, but this has been a lot of fun. I like the all the information. It's super cool. I think the two main things that I'm personally taking away is that there's different qualities of tools between Pro Tools and DIY tools. That's something I didn't realize before, but now that you mentioned, like, oh yeah, it makes complete sense that the industry would need to implement that.
Yeah.
And then B, we're getting into so much more of a tools have specific uses, and you shouldn't really be using all those different wrenches and screwdrivers as hammers and prying tools.
Well, no, you know, there's been the lifelong tool saying the right tool for the right job, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's amazing that, you know, it's like, well, futz around and try to figure out a way to get something apart. But if you just had this one tool,
yeah,
you know,
and that's where the invention is made, baby.
Right? Yeah. You know, it's like how many times have I tried to pry apart a snap ring with screwdrivers? You know, where if I just had a snap ring plier or something, you know, it would work fine.
Yeah,
you know, which I do have, by the way. So I'm just saying. No, I think that was cool. I do want to repeat, hashtag don't use cheater bars in our Instagram
post.
Don't
be a cheater, baby.
Don't use cheater bars. Post up a photo this week, and by Monday next week, we will announce a winner for that hashtag.
Yep. And then I believe that's good. We'll be announcing the winner from last week's hashtag giveaway on Thursday of this week. So this Thursday's episode 103. You'll have the winner from last week's hashtag. So, yeah.
Sounds good.
If
you have any questions for Gear Wrench Corey, feel free to shoot them over to us and we'll pass them along.
We'll either pass them along, or if we get a bunch of questions like kind of quickly, then what we'll do is we'll save them and have him back on for another episode and kind of surprise him with the questions and put him on the spot on air.
Oh, those are always fun. Right. The very technical questions, bring him on. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And see me try to squirm out of it, my sales ability. Try to squirm out of those ones.
Nice. Very cool. So send them all those on over, Jimmy or Tyler at snailtrail4x4.com. You can always DM us on Instagram as well. Jimmy is kind of monitoring. We'll get all the DMs from snailtrail4x4. I've got all the ones over at 4x4 Toyota Tyler, but we also share those a lot with each other if a one comes in for the other person. So, doesn't really matter. You can send either one to either Instagram account. And then, do you have a way that people can contact you, or should they just go through us for now?
Oh,
we're going to put you on the spot here.
Put me on the spot. Yeah. Go through, SnailTrail4x4. That way we can, you know, help promote them. I think you guys are doing an awesome job. That's why we're on here partnering with you guys. So we want you guys to get all the accolades for what you guys do and everything like that. You know, so we get plenty of that. So
that was well done. Way to squirm out of that. I liked it.
Sales ability 101.
That was cool.
Put it back onto the other person.
There you go. Very cool. So yeah, if you guys have any questions, send them on over. We'll make sure Corey gets them, or we'll get another episode going with them. It's been a lot of fun. It's been awesome having you on.
Thank you.
It's always fun to have you over at the Snail Studio, whether we're breaking tape measures or whatever else we're doing, so recording episodes. So, yeah, thanks for coming out, man.
Thanks for having me a lot, yeah.
Yeah. So we get to do our final words. We'll let Jimmy go first because he's more used to it, but get something kind of teamed up, or I guess queued up, ready to go over there. But, Jimmy, do you have any final words for everybody out there?
Gear wrench, baby.
Gear wrench, baby. And Corey, do you have any final words for everybody?
Hashtag don't use cheater bars.
And with that, my friends, keep crawling.
Make sure to use the hashtag don't use cheater bars to get entered into a $1,000 gear wrench giveaway. Woo-hoo! Also, tag gear wrench and tag snailtrail4x4 in your post so that we can find you and so that other people can find us.
And how do we tag people, Jimmy?
You use the at symbol. For all those people out there that don't know how to do the tagging, you use the at symbol. If you don't know how to do a hashtag, you use the pound symbol. And then write out, don't use cheater bars.
All one word, no apostrophe. So yeah, I think that should be pretty simple, pretty easy to do. Hopefully all your friends see it and ask you, hey, how do I win $1,000 in tools? And then you can tell them, go check out Snail Trail 4x4 and post it, getting entered into this contest. So good luck, everybody. Make sure that those hashtags get out there. You have 1 week, so you have until next Monday's episode to get those, and then we'll announce the winner on the following Thursday. Sound good, y'all?
Sounds good.
All right. Not talking and just sitting there.
I'll let you do that. I do have a joke for you guys.
No. Yeah? You're going to take over Jimmy's joke time?
That's fine.
I got sure. one, and Jimmy can do it, too.
Okay.
But, yeah.
What's the joke? I want to hear
it. You want to hear it?
Yeah, go.
Okay, well. What? Did you hear about peanut butter?
About peanut butter?
Yeah. Huh. Never mind. I don't want to spread rumors.
Nice.